You guys would please join me in a brief moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. We'll get to the readings. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right. That's going to bring us to our first reader. We're going to do Who's an Addict, and we have asked Autumn to come along, and she is going to read Who's an Addict.
Hi, my name is Autumn, and I'm an addict. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you, Autumn. Thank you for reading. And next up, we got my main man, the infamous James P.
All right, I'm James and I'm an addict.
James.
Thank God for Renee. All right, how it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, you're ready to take certain steps that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted we are powerless over our addiction, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. Feel our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. For if you are like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand's never enough. We put great emphasis on this because we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before coming to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Woo-hoo!
Thank you, James. Love you, brother. Love your enthusiasm, man. You keep coming back now. All right.
Is there more? Do I share
now? We got one more speaker. Two more speakers. That's it. James, mute yourself. I'm having a hard time muting you. There it goes. Work. All right. Good stuff. All right, man. These guys are going to take us home, man. You guys are in for a treat. We got our first speakers all the way from Sacramento, California. You guys were given a warm Southern California welcome to Joey G. Joey, you got the floor, my brother.
Hi, good evening, everyone. I'm Joey. I'm an addict, and my name is Joey. I'm setting a timer because I have the gift of gab. So with everything going on, I'm just going to start with where I'm at right now. Like 2 years ago, I took a really big leap of faith and I applied for a county job, and I went through the whole process on faith. And I've coming up on my 1 year probation in April. And it's been really incredible. Like, and I'll get to like the fellowship, like surrounding me, like a kind of like a herd mentality in a little bit. And I'm also a part-time college student as well. I started to go back to school when I got clean some time ago, and then I like stopped because I had moved away. And I'm about halfway through with my associate's degree in interpersonal studies, interdisciplinary studies of social and behavioral science. And I also have a 5-month-old kitten who will be demanding my attention, so I apologize in advance. and it's been pretty difficult. So everything's online. I get burnt out really quickly being on Zoom meetings for school, with my home group, everything all together. So it kind of compounds and affects my mental health. And I'll get into that in a little bit too, and how that impacts my recovery and how they intersect. And so I got clean at 22 years old. I have... I'm going to look this up so I don't give myself any fronts, because I don't have to count anymore. There's an app for that. I have 5 years and 9 months clean. And this is my first time in Narcotics Anonymous. I've never knew that being clean was possible before this. And so I'm just going to take you on like this little journey of like, you know, I told you a little bit about where I'm at today, and now I'm going to tell you like how I got there. And so I grew up institutionalized. I was a ward of the state for over a decade. Both my parents are addicts, and I come from a family of addicts. And growing up the way that I did, I learned a lot of lessons. I learned a lot of misinformation by misinformed people. And when in those moments, that is where the narrative of that I was never going to be good enough was born. Those were the moments where these misinformed like narratives were always, or these tapes that like to play out through my disease, like shows up in my life repeatedly, right? And like Narcotics Anonymous gives me like this formula by working the steps with a sponsor who has worked all 12 steps, a way to navigate those things. And I get to uncover my patterns, and I get to discard them if they're not serving me anymore. You know, when I got clean, they would tell me like I had my choice back. And at the beginning, I didn't really understand what that meant. And through working the steps, I gained the ability to respond instead of react, and understanding that my feelings and thoughts intersect and they impact each other. And then I attach behaviors or actions to those, either those feelings or those thoughts. And what I like to say now is, like, if I can disrupt one of those things by placing a spiritual principle either in between the thought and the feeling, and therefore voiding out the action behind it. So going back to the beginning, one of the other lessons that I learned was that I experienced a lot of different trauma and neglect. And one of the lessons that I learned was that I had something that men want, and it gave me power where I was powerless. And so I used that to my advantage to get my needs met. And that continued through my addiction and being an adult. And so after that, like, my childhood was pretty normal. Like, my grandma adopted me when I was 13. And, like, I chose to forget all of those things that had happened. And so what I like to say is, denial is the safety blanket that keeps me safe. And things that are too traumatizing or otherwise harmful, it's a safety mechanism that I discovered, like, through working steps with my sponsor. Like, that's the way that it shows up for me. And so at the end of it, like, a lot of the behavioral patterns that I saw through my step work was I was seeking connection, and I had this unfillable desire to be wanted. And it all goes back to those misinformed narratives that I was given. You know, I was in the system because I wasn't loved and I wasn't wanted, and I was just a runaway that no one cared about. And so when I was in high school, you know, I had these bright ideas, and I started engaging in sex work at 18 while I was still in high school. And I did that for a lot of years. And it was going back to that, I was using men like the drug before I started using drugs. And I wanted to manufacture the feelings that I wanted to have. And that may not make sense to some people, but it will make sense to some others. And then I found out that I was diagnosed with HIV when I was 20 years old. So, like, when I got clean and you guys were talking about the disease, like, mindset and, like, what that meant, or the concept, I knew what that meant. I could relate to that, because when you guys would talk about how the steps and sponsorship and the fellowship and the spiritual principles behind the steps were things that helped keep your disease at bay, like, I could relate to that, you know, because I was already dealing with a disease that I had to keep at bay with medication and, you know, medical providers and stuff like that. And so I don't need to go into, like, using details, because my story is not unique. We all know how to get loaded. We all know how to cop. We all know how to front. We all know how to do all those things. And I just kind of sum it up like this. Like, I go psychotic. There's no happy using, you know, la-di-da. And so, like, I start seeing things, hearing things, and it's literally, it is not a pretty picture. I am when I got clean in Sacramento. And I got clean in a homeless shelter for people living with HIV. And I remember this to this day, like it was yesterday, sitting on the back porch, sharing war stories as we do when we're new. And someone was like, you know, it sounds like you might need a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And that was the start of my journey with NA. And I can tell you there's not enough time to like share with you just like how much this fellowship means and what it's taught me, what it's given me. You know, and it's not about the like tangible things. Like I can say that I love myself today, that I have self-respect today, that I have intangible things that are invaluable. And so I started working steps, and I'm currently on my second round of steps, and I'm doing them around my, I'm doing feeling steps and around my emotions and the way that they intersect with my thoughts and how they, I attach them with behaviors. And it's pretty difficult because like, I can tell you right now that like where I'm at is my step work is pretty dusty with everything going on. And I already have like a plan of action to like address all of that with my sponsor. And so like being clean, I've had to learn a lot of lessons really early on. Like dealing with grief and loss and death as a newcomer. We had a sudden death in the family when I got clean, and like that, I was working on like my reservations at the time. And I don't believe in coincidences. I always believe like what my sponsor would tell me at the time, that I'm always right where I'm supposed to be. And so it was like every step that I'm on is what the events in my life were playing out. It was really, it still to this day really kind of weirds me out, but it's kind of cool. And then at 11 months clean, I had a cancer scare. And because you guys had taught me how to be like a, just a little bit about how being a productive member of society, like my boss gave me all the time off I needed. And a member drove me to my appointment, and the doctors were grateful that we had caught it before it had begun to precancerous. And I had to have my abdomen cauterized because I had abnormal cell growth in my abdomen. And so like one of my dear friends, she talks about NA as a herd of elephants. And so we herd around the people who are sick, and we herd around the people who are suffering, and we protect them until they're well enough to get back up on their feet, you know? And so like, that's just my story with Narcotics Anonymous. Like when I got here, people would like let me borrow their courage and their higher power. And help me walk through shit and take a shower later, because it's not always graceful and it's not always pretty, but I've stayed clean. And so I've learned a lot of other lessons in Narcotics Anonymous while being clean for the last 5 and so years. And one of the other things is that my disease immediately impacts my mental health. And the way it impacts my mental health is very much an inside issue. And to the opposite, what I do with my provider is very much an outside issue. And so I'm very clear about that. And so I'm going to talk about that too, because it's important. We have members who are hurting themselves and suffering in silence, and the stigmatized ideology that's in Narcotics Anonymous about mental health and recovery. And so, like, that member who drove me to that appointment after I had celebrated 2 years clean, I went through a suicidal ideation because they had changed the recipe in my HIV medication. And it triggered a near psychotic break. And so, once again, Narcotics Anonymous showed up for me. And I got through that without hurting myself or doing anything to compromise my clean time. And shortly thereafter, my friend who had 19 years clean committed suicide. And so, like, my disease will play those tapes where I'm not good enough and I don't belong here, and that the world would be better off without me. And it intersects with my depression and other things that are going on. And so what I learned from that experience is that my clean time protects me from nothing. You know, all the things that I've gone through clean, my clean time guarantees me nothing. It doesn't guarantee me a job. It doesn't guarantee anything. Life shows up. Shit shows up. And I've been able to apply what I've been taught in Narcotics Anonymous. And so it's been interesting. And the journey still is just, I don't know what's going to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen when I got here, and I still don't know what's going to happen. But I'm still doing the next right thing, and I'm still doing, you know, I get to do whatever I want. And it's really cool. I get to go back to school. I get to work. I get to, I adopted a cat. I'm very much a pit bull guy, and no one guessed that I would get this giant fluffy kitten. I have 5 minutes. Okay. Thank you. I've gotten to be of service in Narcotics Anonymous. I started as a greeter, and it was really uncomfortable because I had a lot of, like, PTSD and some unresolved traumatic things that happened to me throughout my using and growing up with sexual trauma. And so I didn't want anyone to touch me. And so that was a really, talk about, like, breaking the ice, like with a jackhammer. And I did a lot of service at group level, and then I got the opportunity to be of service at area level. And, you know, service inside of Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to be of service to my community as well, and that I had something to offer of value. And so at 11 months clean, I got asked to go to Washington, D.C. and talk about being a young person living with HIV and being someone in recovery and what that meant. And to very, powerful individuals who make very strong decisions for our country, and tell them my story honestly and share with them vulnerably about how it impacts my life, and that type of community service like went parallel with being of service to Narcotics Anonymous. And before this whole COVID situation, I was the chair for a youth HIV leadership conference here in town for 2 years. And I learned everything to do that here in Narcotics Anonymous. Writing a schedule, picking speakers, writing a budget, coordinating rides and stuff, you know, everything that we do here, it is totally transferable skills from inside the rooms to real life. And that's the goal, is to become, for me, this is my understanding, right? Because there's three parts to our message. You know, any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use drugs, and find a different way to live. And so I see a lot of people get caught up on the first two, but the third one's kind of a hit and miss. And the last thing I want to talk about is forgiveness. And the really crucial thing about that is that it's not for the person, place, or thing that harmed you. It's for you. And that's through my own experiences. Like, I've had to forgive the people who were meant to protect me and therefore neglected and abused me. Or the places where, like, at a facility where my arm was broken by a staff member, and to forgive them for what they had done or anything like that, it frees me from being held hostage to that pain. You know, any of those, you know, things that I have done to myself, forgiving myself freed me from that pain and freed me from being hostage to that information. So if you didn't get anything out of my share, there's another speaker. You can use this platform to go to meetings all over the world 24/7. And I truly hope that you find what I have found in Narcotics Anonymous, and that was a home, because that's all I ever wanted growing up, was somewhere where I could belong, somewhere I could call home. And I have found that in Narcotics Anonymous. So I want to thank the committee for asking me to share tonight, and I hope everyone has a wonderful night. Thank you.
Thank you, Joey. Thank you for being here, sharing with us, and be a part of our convention. We appreciate you. A courageous story, man. Thank you for the hope, brother. All right, we're going to go to our last speaker, you guys. He comes out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is a guy that I've seen in person, man. You know, he's got a group of people that love him, man. He gets a lot of support, and we're grateful to have him here tonight. He stayed up a little late for us. Cameron, you get the next 30 minutes, baby boy.
I'm an addict. My name's Cameron. Hey, Jimmy, I appreciate it, man. Can you guys hear me all right?
Gotcha.
All right, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. I want to first by start saying, I'm grateful for the opportunity. I want to thank the San Fernando Valley Area Convention Committee and Jimmy Jam for reaching out to me, giving me this opportunity. And, I seen San Fernando Valley, and it made me think of Chris G in this topic, because I know that this was his area, and he just texted me, and I was like, man, how'd you get my number? How did you get my number before I got yours? And it's just crazy how things work out, because I'm speaking for a workshop topic oriented about youth in recovery, right? Young people in recovery. And I'm grateful for experienced trailblazers, right, in Narcotics Anonymous, no matter what it is, but specifically members who have the experience of getting clean young, right? Really grateful for that. And you know, I was that the topic for real struck me, you know, because I've been in a spot that's been struggle, right? I just turned 21 in Narcotics Anonymous. I got the horizontal ID, right? And it's like, goddamn, like I could go to the club now. I go get a legal one now. Shit, I could do anything I want out here. And my clean day is September 25th of 2017. I celebrated 3 years clean. I got clean when I was 18 years old. And man, it's been a journey, you know. You know, I'm grateful to see that there's members doing their thing on Zoom and carrying the message no matter what. I'm grateful to be able to do this. You know, but I'm in Dallas, Texas right now. And man, we've had a good day out here. I'm at the hotel in downtown Dallas. You know, we came up here to be a part of this event that my sponsor's wife, Annie, who's a good friend of mine, she came up here and shared at this basic text drive. Seen a lot of good people I love. My grand sponsor closed it out, Terry B, at the speaker jam. And it's just been a good day, man, a good day in recovery. And it's like to think like I'm in Dallas, Texas right now, looking at the skylines, looking at the light, 21 years old, right? And clean, right? Like I'm not out there trying to pull up to the club, right? Trying to, you know, get my best fit on with some retro J's and or some Yeezys and just trying to like go get me something, right? Go get me one in the bathroom, get high, get me a next girl that I can just use for sex, right? Like I'm not doing that today, right? And it's just crazy that what's happened to me, right? Our symbol talks about how the purpose of the fellowship is to make recovery available to all, right? And I'm just grateful for the grind that's been established ever since. Like the members who devoted their life to this process, to the Narcotics Anonymous and sacrificed things by putting this first to help me when I got here, right? Because I was thinking about the pamphlet by Young Addicts. And it talks that, where does it say it exactly? You may not see young members in the meetings you go to, but if you stay clean and keep coming back, you'll find us, right? And thank God I came to Narcotics Anonymous and Marty Mo was there, right? I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska. I was born and raised there, you know, raised by young ass parents. My mom got knocked up when she was 15 years old. And, you know, I was hanging out with my dad on the weekends, you know, going crazy. He was doing blow, drinking Patron, smoking blunts, you know, and fumbled into, you know, strung out on meth. And my mom was in a bad spot. And, you know, I started catching on fast, right? Family, a bunch of addicts, right? Not everyone, but, you know how it is, right? And it just like no one from my family went to college, right? Like we didn't have money, right? Like we living paycheck to paycheck, right? Getting evicted out of the house in middle school and shit. And I appreciate the young, you know, the young guy who shared before me, man. That's definitely what an inspiring story for real, you know? To think, you know, like just how people go through some things and just, you know, just keep grinding, you know, that's admiring to me for sure. You know, no matter what the obstacle is, just keep grinding. Cause I know how hard it can get for sure for me. And, you know, like, so like everything that was happening in my life, right? Like the inevitable was going to happen was I was going to fuck my life up. Right. Like, that was just my, you know, that's just what was going to happen because that's just what I knew. So it's like I started the first time I ever used drugs, I was 11 years old up at the playground at the school I went to and I didn't want to use, right? Like that's the hit. I didn't want to use the first time I ever put one in my body. It was against my own will, right? Because I knew that it wasn't right. You know, we talk about, you know, like it being like it's not a moral dilemma that I have. Like it's not a moral deficiency, right? Like I got to understand that I have the disease of addiction, right? I knew right from wrong, right? But I had this driving force that made me go beyond that because I wanted to fit in with these crowd of kids, with the older kids, right? Because I was insecure, right? They made me cry and, you know, one used to beat me up and shit. So it's like I wanted to fit in, right? I wanted to meet up to that because I felt so goddamn insecure growing up, right? You know, having the young mom pulling up to kindergarten and instances of transferring to the more rich school, and my mom drove a Humpty and she was young, and the parents asked me if like that was my sister. And I remember the way that made me feel, right? I remember when I felt like the kids asked me, why don't we ever go spend the night at your house, right? Because I was embarrassed of having them come over, right? Coming over to this little dinky rental house that we had, right? Dirty. And you know, it's just like, fuck, man. And it's like the only way I could cover up my nice shit, right? Let me get some, mom put me in some Jordans and, you know, those new elite socks and fucking Nike elites were popping when I was young, you know, put me in anything to cover about how I really feel, right? And it's like, so things started to happen and, you know, it's like I caught a truancy case where I wasn't going to school and things were bad and, you know, and I was starting to experiment with other drugs because they'd get out of your system faster, right? Started to figure out ways to use artificial piss and wrap it with a hand warmer to pass UAs and getting put on house arrest and went to the juvenile detention center one time. You know, things like that, like those abnormal things, right? Like something was trying to intervene, right? Like they sent me to the outpatient treatment center when I was like 14, 15 years old and trying to tell me dopamine that the certain drugs do and drugging, you know, like great, like bad information. Like I just needed to find someone who understands, right? Who has faced our dilemma and found our way out. That is our only hope, right? And so it's like, man, I just, you know, ultimately things started to progress really fast for me, right? And we read this in my home group. Before I go anywhere, my home group is the Recovery at Work group in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And like I said, I'm from Lincoln. I got clean in Lincoln and Lincoln, Nebraska, middle of the map. And, you know, I things have been good. And I ended up in Tulsa, and I'll get into. But you were in. Page 7 of the basic text, it says, we may have tried to moderate, substitute, or even stop using, but we went from a state of success and well-being to complete spiritual, mental, and emotional bankruptcy, right? And it's like, I believe I never had drug success, right? Like ever since I started using, I couldn't do nothing right. Like, right. Like I couldn't go to school. I couldn't, like, there was no success when I put drugs in my body, right? Like when I put it in me, I couldn't stop, right? Like when I couldn't just have one, like if I'm going to have one, I'm going to get in a state of oblivion every fucking time. Right. That's just how it happened. Right. It's our alert. It's our reaction to drugs that makes us addicts, not how much we used, man. And it's like the reaction of like it turning you into something you never wanted to be, right? Saying things that you didn't want to say and doing habits, degrading yourself, right? Sleeping with people you don't want to sleep with or gaining the accept, trying to chase acceptance from other people who don't even care about you, right? And things like that started to happen. And, you know, things were bad, man. Like I was up in the high school and snorting pills off the fucking toilet paper roll, acting like I was taking a shit. Always had to have my little party pack in my sock when I went to school. And, you know, I mean, like my story is I was just a pill fiend, man. Like that's the no cut. Like that's me. Right. That is me. Right. Because I get fucked up. Right. Reservations. Right. I never shot heroin. Right. I never smoked meth like my dad. Blah, 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 blah. It's like that's just what it was. Right. But it's like eventually like it just kept progressing no matter what. It was all downhill. And I'm just grateful for what happened to me. Right. I kept running out. Right. I remember walking across, you know, graduating high school at 17 years old, thinking, you know, like a 1.9 GPA, barely did it right, fucked up. I remember going there faded and my mom was so disappointed because I couldn't even show up to the graduation, not oblivion. You could just see it in my eyes, right? And I was just so scared, right? So scared because in the triangle of self-obsession, it's in the IP, it talks about, it says, It talks about how people, most continue, like most people, right? Most continue to mature. They recognize and accept their strengths, weaknesses, and limitations. At some point, they usually seek the help of a power greater than themselves to provide the things they cannot provide for themselves. For most people, growing up is a natural process, right? For me, it's not, right? For me, it's not a natural process to think, I'm going to go to college, right? I'm going to do that. I'm going to eventually invest into a career and do good things. Like, no, that wasn't the plan. The plan was to get $30,000, go to Colorado, always have dope on me, and grow weed and bring it back and sell it illegally, right? Like, that was my only goal, right? My only goal was to figure out how I can continue using. Right. Only goal was to figure out how to take the way out because I don't want to take responsibility for my life. That was the only goal. Right. And it's like the thing of it is like I kept running out. Right. And it's crazy because after I graduated, it was May of 2017. Right. I called my dad one night. Right. It was after a night I was fucked up and I woke up and I was in pain. Right. Like I was immediately withdrawing. I had one more on me and I flushed it down the toilet and I called my dad on his 3-year clean date. Didn't even know, right? My dad ended up getting clean in Narcotics Anonymous. He knew a good friend in NA who helped him get clean and he ended up passing away not too long ago, right? Because of this disease, right? You know, he had 7 years clean and ended up relapsing. And our literature talks about some of us go beyond recall, right? Permanently insane. And, you know, like it's sad, right? But thank God for what he did for my father, right? Because, you know, my dad got clean, right? So it's like he was telling me about Narcotics Anonymous. And like I seen the transformation, the fundamental transformation in his life, right? Just in his spirit. It's not like he all got this fucking money and like started whipping a dope ass car. It was just like he started to like light up, right? Like becoming alive, right? And I seen that, right? Because I remember when he was dying, dead, right? And I called him on his 3-year clean date. I had no idea, no lie. And it was about to be his clean date's June 15th. And my birthday is June 18th, and it's the Father's Day weekend, right? And I called him. Man, I can't do it, man. I can't keep doing this. Come pick me up. And he picked me up and I had a backpack with my PlayStation in it, just running around, making plays and couch hopping and not want to go home and sleep at night on my own head to face my own thoughts. Like I didn't want to do that. And it's like, man, we took a moment. I told him and we cried, right? And he's like, man, you can come with me to this camp out, which was actually the other fellowship because his wife's in that fellowship. And I went there and I fucking withdraw and it sucked. I celebrated my 18th birthday clean. And then we ended up at the Boys to Men group of Narcotics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska that Wednesday. And what happened was I seen him pick up a 3-year medallion, right? And then I went to, he had to go to work. And then I went to the Chinese restaurant after. And that's when Marty Mo gave me his phone number. He's like, man, if you ever need anything, just call me, man. Call me, right? And it's like that night I ended up using drugs again, right? And it's like things like that, like the seed was planted, right? Like something, like they fucked up my high, right? Like they, by going to that meeting and hearing and trying to get clean, they interfere, like our message will interfere with your using, right? And, you know, that's just what happened. And, you know, I kept running out, withdrawal sucks. And ultimately we experience only periodic jolts of reality and self-awareness, what Who Is an Addict also says. It's like through those times I was realizing that I really wasn't doing shit. Like I had nothing going for me. I had no goals. I didn't know what I was going to do. Life without drugs didn't make sense. And life with drugs didn't make sense, right? In this dilemma. And it's like, all I knew I could do is just, let me try what my dad did, right? Let me try what he did. And I went to the treatment center, right? And I didn't go in there like, hell yeah, let's go. Like, let's start on this road to recovery, right? I just knew I had to do something different. You know, I spent 21 days in there. And then when I got out, my mom and my dad picked me up and I made a Narcotics Anonymous meeting that night, the day of our release, right? When I used to do H&I back in Lincoln, we would always tell them that, you know, we highly suggest as soon as you get out of this facility, you make a meeting on the day of your release. And that's what I was able to do. And we started making meetings. And we pulled up to Lost and Found group of Narcotics Anonymous in Lincoln, and Marty Mo was there, and he happened to be sharing that night at a speaker meeting. And I mean, it just hit me, bro. He got clean when he was 19. He wanted to be in a rap video. I mean, it just hit me, right? Like in that moment, I thought maybe, just maybe me too, I can participate in this way of life. Maybe I don't have to use drugs ever again, right? And it's like, man, things just started to happen, right? The next weekend, the Nebraska Regional Convention of NA was in Lincoln, Nebraska, in my city. I had 30 days clean. I showed up to the convention, and I was like, man, I don't know about this, man. I don't know about all these motherfuckers hugging, and I was just uncomfortable, right? And that's when I met, that's when all of a sudden here comes my sponsor now. Richard comes up to me and he goes, hey, what's up, man? Let's go smoke a cigarette, right? And it's like, man, things started to happen. I met Richard, right? I met Annie. I met Ben. I met my grand sponsor, Terry, right? And like things, you know, like at this time, I'm at this convention, right? 30 days clean. And I'm thinking, I don't know about this, man. I know I got my old buddies, you know, over there. I know what they're doing, you know, and I got captured up by these people, right? We went out to eat and they're talking about this 1 year anniversary, the Recovery at Work group in Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? Having this 1 year anniversary and yada, yada. And it just sounded exciting, man. It just sounded exciting to me. And I went. Right. And I went and it's like, man, something started to happen. Right. We started traveling, man. And like, I remember that first time out of town, we went to Tulsa. It did something to me. Right. Like it changed my life. I don't know what it was. But the power of that meeting and that group of people did something. Right. It did something all the way to the point where we started the Recovery at Work group in Lincoln, Nebraska. Right. Where then another Recovery at Work group started in Fort Dodge. I was participating in this process. Right. Like I got fired up and we started traveling together and visiting with one another. And I started meeting people and getting fired up, man. And, you know, I enrolled in school, which I never thought I would do. You know, I didn't want to. I remember being there clean thinking, I don't want to fucking do this. Right. I don't want to do anything. Ultimately today, still, I'd rather do absolutely nothing, right? I'd want to just sit in my room, play the goddamn video game and do absolutely nothing, right? Because something in me just doesn't want to take responsibility for my life, right? These things started to happen and I went to school and it started off all good, list, blah, blah, blah. And then complacency hits in. You start getting C's and shit. But ultimately, I graduated with an associate's in business, right? And ultimately, I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for the principles of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Like, I wouldn't have learned commitment, right, to just show up to the goddamn class, right? Regardless if you're too tired, if you don't want to, because I learned that about my home group, right? You just show up. No, regardless of what's going on, you show up to your home group no matter what. You make meetings. That's just what we do here. Thank God for the members around me. And in this time, I was able to work a set of steps with Marty, and things started to, you know, every like basically I just we were traveling down to Tulsa a lot, man, and I felt drawn to ask my sponsor now, Richard, to sponsor me. And I felt this thing to go down to Tulsa and experience life down there, right? And I was talking about it and I was sharing about it as I was going to school and stuff. And I was able to move down here, you know, and it's been a great experience. And, you know, my sponsor, you know, he's let me come stay with him and his brand new house, which he didn't have to do. Him and Annie didn't have to let me do that, right? And it's been a great experience. Super grateful for it, man. I love it. You know, like we, you know, my sponsor, he'll break my ass off sometimes telling me the truth, right? Seeing how I really live. It's sometimes a struggle, but it's like, goddamn, you got to grow up sometime in this bitch, right? Like we must grow up or die, right? Like if I'm not going to grow up and change some patterns and some behaviors and take sponsorship seriously and talk about really how I'm feeling, these real deep insecurities, then I'm going to get high. Our defects backed us in a corner where we cannot get out clean, right? And it's like I've been noticing some things with his help and been able to participate in my home group. And man, it's been a great thing, right, to be down here and to be living life with these people It's like offer, but no matter what, it's like I'm grateful for everyone that I've come in contact with, because it's not like in Lincoln, like it wasn't enough for me or nothing like that, because my dad's up there and, you know, all good friends I've developed and stuff. But it's like, man, I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to live life to the fullest for me, man. And like, I'm grateful for the opportunity that I've gotten to develop relationships that's been, you know, meaningful, and new friends, and Gabe's in here, and I invited him because I know he really loves me and I really love him, and hanging out with Jamie this weekend and just deepening relationships, right? You know, that's what it's all about for me, having people, right? Because sometimes for me, right, it's been hard. You know, recently, 3 years clean, just turned 21, reservations of things that I've never done. You know, it's not been easy, right? You know, not really trying to fuck with any girls in NA, right? Because like, fuck that, you know, I'm trying to hit up old girls I went to high school with that still drink, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, I can't be hooking up with no NA girls and this and that, old behavior, like, you know, like, and it's like, man, it's been a struggle where it's like something in me, right? You know, I've been doing this for some time now, and I've devoted my life to it. And, you know, something in me has started to fester where, like, I've started to look at all the differences, right? Like, oh, I didn't do that. I didn't do this. And maybe it was just a phase, and maybe I can go just drink just one. Or, you know, ultimately what it is I don't feel like my experience means anything in Narcotics Anonymous all of a sudden. All of a sudden I haven't been helping nobody, because all the cats that I've sponsored end up leaving because they don't think NA's for them. And it's like I haven't been participating in service where I think, well, my experience means nothing in here, right? That's what I start to tell myself, meaning like the only way your experience is going to mean something in here in this society is if you go out and lose everything and put a needle in your arm, right? Like that's the way, like that's insane. That's insane to think that I got to go do that and then return here, right? Or it's like, or I'll just go out and just try to use alcohol successfully. And it's like, hell no. I've never been able to just have one drink. Are you, you know, like that's insane to think that, like that allergy has somehow been lifted, right? Like that I can just have one and just not want another. Like that's fucking insane. You know, so it's like, that's been a real struggle for alienation, right? An aspect of our disease is alienation. And I've been backing myself up, and I went back to Lincoln for the holidays and met up with some friends that I went to high school with and went to the casino. Like, why the fuck are you going to a casino? You know, like you never even, you know, like crazy shit. And reminiscing about all the good drug experiences and just thinking about like, man, like, I don't know if I want to do this. Right. And then coming back and having, you know, trying to convince my mom to don't trip if I leave and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, man, like, it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's like I haven't been able to rationalize, logically convince myself that I can just have one, right? That I can just have one and it won't get bad. Or I can only just use this one substance and ain't going to turn into something else, right? Because ultimately, common sense tells us it would be insane to return to the source of our allergy, man. And it's just, I'm just grateful for that information that you guys poured in me. The literature, the information that it provides for me and allows me to identify with, you know, if it wasn't for that, I'd been gone. I'd have been gone out of here, not knowing what the fuck's wrong with me still. And it's been a beautiful journey, really. And I'm grateful. I'm most grateful for the members, right, that has helped me, devoted their time to help me and believed in me. Because that's the only reason why I'm here, I believe, right? Because most of the time I cannot believe in myself, but it's something about another addict just pushing me, believing in me that just gets me, right? You know, because everyone, you know, the teachers, man, they tried. My mom tried. They tried to believe in me, told me I had so much potential, but just something about somebody who understands the disease of addiction and the recovery process, man. Just something therapeutic in it, like it says. It's just something powerful, right? And it's definitely the most powerful thing we have is, you know, with one another. And, you know, at the end of the day, man, I'm not going nowhere, right? you know, my life is just going to continue to get better. I need to just participate in life, man, not settle for limits. I need to go back and get a bachelor's degree in finance or accounting of something I want to do, man. Like, ultimately, I don't want to go broke. I don't want to take out student loans. I don't want to have to work full time and go to school full time because I think I'll fail, right? Like, Annie just got a master's and she was doing that. And I was thinking, God damn, I can't do that. That's impossible for me. And ultimately, I don't, you know, it's not impossible, right, for me. I just got to be able to convince myself to just try it, right? Put up as much effort as I can and just continue to grow, man. Continue, you know, I'm on my first step right now. I finished writing it. Me and my sponsor are, you know, about to process it, you know, and it's like, I don't have drug experiences on this first step this time, right? I've been walking around this bitch, you know, talking about the disease of addiction, but my actions show I just believe I have a drug problem, right? Not utilizing sponsor like I believe I'm an addict or you know, my, you know, because addicts tend what, you know, to live what they believe, man. And ultimately, I just need to come to a deeper level of acceptance and surrender. And it's just a process, man. You know, at the end of the day, I can accept where I'm at today. And I'm definitely not perfect. I definitely got issues. An issue that happened with, you know, I'm about done. An issue that happened with me is I've been learning is I live with my sponsor, right? We're about to go down to my sponsorship gathering down in Austin, Texas next weekend. And I assumed that I could ride with him, right? Like that spot's mine. So I'm not going to ask him. I'll just assume, you know, that I'm riding with him. And ultimately, when I found out that I wasn't going to ride with him, I freaked out, right? I went to my room. I was mad as a motherfucker, getting resentful, telling myself stories. Man, he don't love me, right? These people around here don't love me. Cause I started texting other people asking if, oh, we got a full car, man, we got a full car. And you know, it's like to think that I'm so goddamn special, right? Where I just had to like ask him, can I ride with you, man? Right. And, one of my biggest issues right now is entitlement, right? I think I need to be treated a special way. Right. And it's like, ultimately the people in my life now don't deserve to be treated with this entitlement that I'm carrying from the past, that because of my dad not loving me, I think enough, or, you know, my mom deserve, you know, she's owes me this stuff and owes me this. So it's like, I carry that wherever I go. Right. And defects are a bad thing. Being able to understand that I need a God in my life, a power greater than myself, is definitely takes some humility. So, like I said, I'm grateful for this opportunity and being able to share a little bit with you guys. Thank you guys once again, and I'll pass.
Cameron, thank you, man.